Journalist Anna Bodkin covers wars. She spent years embedded in Iraq and then in Afghanistan. She's picked her way through minefields. She's been held at gunpoint and experienced what it's like to have a $50,000 price on her head, thanks to the Taliban. But she's not a sentimentalist. Yet the book she chose to write is called Piecemeals, Candy-Wrapped Kalashnikovs and Other War Stories. Anna, welcome.
Thank you very much.
You know, at first glance, a book about food and war reporting, of all things, it seems really odd. Can you explain the link for us?
You know, Lynn, I think that the way we're all united, people here in the United States and people in the most direst of a failed state, is by the common need we have to eat. At the end of the day, if we're lucky, we're going to have something to eat. And the idea was to take the reader beyond the bang-bang that we see plenty of on television and in newspapers and talk about the very, very humane stories that continue to happen in any place. People continue to fall in love. They fall out of love. They quarrel. They have babies. They get married. Because I felt the need to explain to people who are so far removed from war zones that people on the other side are very much like them, so that they're able to connect. And next time they see a firefight on television or a bomb going off, they can imagine the people on the other side who are living in that.
You know, there's something I'd love to have you read from the book, and it's the beginning of a particular chapter. Candy-wrapped Kalashnikovs. Could you read the beginning of that for us?
Sure. It's the beginning of chapter 4. High on Valium and potent Afghan hashish, Najibullah balanced his Kalashnikov rifle on his left shoulder and reached for the jalebi, a pyramid of honey-colored deep-fried rings of hot, syrupy dough stacked on a street vendor's dusty aluminum folding table by the side of a potholed dirt road. He hooked one jalebi with his long index finger, raised it above his head, lifted his bearded face, and, crooning a Bollywood jingle in a tentative falsetto, began to nibble at the sugary donut like some tropical bird, swaying slightly to the rhythm of a song that he alone could follow.
This is a take on food in war that I found pretty unexpected. What's the story behind this?
Well, Najibullah, a gorgeous and a very troubled young man, a fighter, had been given to me by the warlord cum manager of a hotel where I was staying in Jalalabad near Tora Bora in 2001 when Osama bin Laden and about 1,000 Al-Qaeda fighters and Taliban fighters were believed to be hiding in Tora Bora in the mountains. And I was basically told that in order to be able to report from the region, from the area, I had to hire Najibullah and pay not him but his commander $25 a day. I think it was a sort of another way of making money on journalists. And Najibullah turned out to be an absolutely amazing guide to so many things. First of all, this is a man, he was in his mid-20s. He had been fighting since he was 12. He was a portrait of an Afghan man who just found himself swept away by the conflicts that keep rolling across the Afghan mountains and plains there. And he fought against the Soviets, and then he fought against the Taliban, and now for a moment, he was out of work because American Special Forces had taken over the fight. And he basically showed me what the life of the foot soldiers that American forces were using in Afghanistan to rout out the Taliban, what their lives were like. And because he smoked a lot of hashish, he had a bit of a sweet tooth. So he also introduced me to jalebi, which is, as I described, sort of Afghan donuts.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, and the idea of sugar and war, somehow that combination is just, it clashes in my mind. Sugar, the treat, and the
the life
sugar
that's
a
being
treat.
Led. Yeah.
Yeah, it's also, you know, cheap energy. And as I later found out, you know, there is also an alternative use of candy wraps. When a group of gunmen, whom I was also told to hire to accompany me on a very dangerous road, which we had dubbed the Death Road. You know, every country has the Death Road. When my five bodyguards turned their guns at me to demand more money, and I realized that they had wrapped the barrels of their Kalashnikovs with Hubba Bubba wrappers and Donald Duck stickers out of chewing gum packages and dum-dums. And I thought, really? I'm going to be killed by a gun that's screaming at me with yellow and pink and blue? And it was sort of surreal. But very, you know, wars are surreal.
That is utterly surreal. Are there any moments of sitting down at the table with people that really haunt you?
Well, first of all, an American army colonel once told me that people who go through a war with you are a small fraternity. And being together with someone in extremity is a very strong bond. And sharing meal at the end of the day with people who, you know, people who work with me are risking their lives. And after I'm gone, they continue to risk their lives because that they live in a war zone. It's just they can't leave. Yeah. They don't have a place to go. And sharing a meal is one of the most elemental ways of expressing that sense that we're family. We're the closest of friends. We will, you know, if it comes to that, we will die in each other's arms. We will be the last people we see. And the meals differ so much. They vary so much. There were these amazing, lavish meals that looked like wedding feasts that Iraqi soldiers threw for a unit of American soldiers with which I was embedded in 2005. And then there was a pit stop I made in a small Afghan village in 2001. The village was about to starve. Because they had no food, they had no access to food. It had been a long, long drought. The nearest market town was 17 hours of on foot, and they had no cars. And I stopped by a little lean-to that served as a shop that just sold necessities, you know, soap and matches and olive oil. Mm-hmm. And the owner was just about to close the shop for the winter because there was absolutely no need for his wares, because if you don't have anything to cook with cooking oil, then who needs it?
Yeah.
And because I was passing through, he saw me as a guest, and so he automatically became the host. So he shared, you know, he didn't have any food either, but he shared with me what he could, and it was a fistful of these gnarled green, really dry raisins. And he sort of poured those raisins into my palm and apologized that he couldn't give me anything more. And these raisins, Lynn, were worth every single plate at that huge Iraqi table in an Iraqi army base. Because he was giving away, possibly a sustenance for a day. To me, a complete stranger. And these gestures are what makes, these gestures are what reminds me that we're human and reminds me that we're human even in the most dire circumstances.
Anna, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Anna Botkin's book is Peace Meals. Now, you can find a recipe for that Afghan sweet jalebi on the website splendidtable.org.